Okay. So let us start with a methodological issue question that, oh, Shua, you're here. Perfect. Just in time. Welcome, Shua. I needed you for this part.
And, okay. I'm kind of slammed, but I will do my best to engage, as I'm sure everyone else will pick me up as well.
Okay. We just need you in the beginning here, because this is related to our project. Then you could get back to, your grunt work.
I did this with Manchalo Yomalilo, which means 1 a.m. last night and 6 a.m. this morning.
I hear that. Okay, so I just wanted to point out in how this Sahara we had earlier when it came to Zuchus Achilas Poel, we noted that, at least in the Rambam's formulation in Sefer HaMitzvos and in the Koteret Hilchos Chiros, the mitzvah of Achilas Poel didn't seem or didn't automatically correspond to any duty or obligation. The Achilas Poel seemed to be a kind of a zechus, a permission, or a right. But at least in the Koteret, it didn't correspond to any duty or obligation on any other party. And we saw the Zohar HaRakia, who made a big deal about this. He wondered out loud, he even seemed to conclude that it's a category mistake to talk about a mitzvah that just generates a permission rather than imposing some sort of duty. To the Zohar HaRakia's mind, what it means to have a mitzvah is to have some sort of chiyuv, duty, command, obligation that the mitzvah creates. And I think we noted as well that this ties into like a theory of mitzvos that Cover had pointed out, that mitzvos are about commands and obligations and duties, not about rights and privileges. Does this ring a bell? Yeah. Good. So I just wanted to draw your attention to the formulations about Hilchos Shomrim, which we mentioned then would constitute an exception to this kind of analysis. So in Hilchos Chiros and the Hakdama, the Rambam writes that there are 7 mitzvos in Hilchos Chiros. 3 are ases, 4 are lavs. The first one that he states is din sachir v'shomer sachar. Literally just the rules, right? The law of sochar v'shomer sachar. Now, to my mind, that doesn't commit the Rambam to any kind of obligation. There's no reason to think that the din, the mitzvah, that is din sachir v'shomer sachar, is reducible to some conjunction of obligations and duties. Is everybody on board for that diuk? Now, I think it's strengthened. By the way, here's the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Resh Mem Gimel, Mitzvasei. Hi Hatorah shehorenu bedin nosei sachar b'socher, shedin shneim echad. So he just says it's the din of a nose sachar and a socher. So it's literally just the rules. And he cites the psukim. He doesn't tell us that there's any specific duty or obligation associated with it.
So the diuk would be that the Rambam could have said something like chiyuve hashomer v'hasacher, or something like that.
Yeah, shechayev ha-socher l'shalem b'gneva v'aveda. Something like that.
Or it could be like Chayav Lishmor Mi Zeta, yeah, or something like that.
Exactly. And that, by the way, that's a separate question we'll discuss later about what is the, if there is a duty, is it the duty to pay or is there a duty to watch as 2 separate things? But just notice here that the Rambam seems totally comfortable having categories of mitzvos that are just dinim, right? Which are neutral between duties, rights, privileges, powers, whatever they are, right? It's just the rules. And then if you look at Hilchos Chiros, I thought this is interesting also, in the content of the Halachos, Ram says, Aleph of Chiros, Arba Shomrim Nemru B'Torah, V'Shlosha Dinen Yesh Bahem, meaning 3 separate dinim, meaning the Shoel Din, the Shomer Chinam Din, and the combined Socha and Shomer Sachar Din. And look how he opens in Halacha Beis. So far, the Ram hasn't told us anything about an obligation. The Ram opens by saying, V'Elu Hein Shlosha Dinehem. Let me just make this a little bigger, the font a little bigger for anybody who can't see. Okay. Ve'elu hein shlosha dinehem. Shomer chinam shenignav hapikadon mimenu. O avad. Ve'ein tzarech lomar imnenas hapikadon ones gadol. Etc. etc. Harezen nishba sheshamar kederech hashomrim upator. Let's bracket the shvua question for a moment. To my mind, the Rambam here seems to be saying that the first din that he discusses is the ptur shomer chinam from tashlumin, which seems like even if you want to say that the dinim themselves are reducible to duties, the Rambam here opens up with an exemption, the fact that the shomer chinam is potter from everything except for pshia. It's an interesting question that he has to take a shvua. I guess, how do you think of the shvua? He takes a shvua, shlo pashabo. Is that a duty that he has to swear?
Right, like that could be a mitzvah. And I'm not saying that I think that it is, but we should like bracket the fact that that might be what the mitzvah is, right? And it's in the pasuk, right? Like he says, when I grab all that, so.
Yes, but you might say that the shvua is part of his privilege, right? The Torah confers upon him the privilege to take a shvua and be done, or the power to take a shvua and be done with it. Right? So it's not obvious that, you're right, you could talk about the shvua thing as a duty, right? I guess if you want to be potter, you have an obligation, at least to the Baal HaBayis, to take a shvua. So there is a way to try to read that into the Rambam. But I do think it's striking that the first thing that we get from the Rambam is the ptur of a shomer chinam. And even the shvua, I think you could read as a power to potter yourself.
Okay, Itamar? So
let me just take the hands, Cole, and then we'll get to you. So we have Adam Isaac Mann and then Zolti. Actually, one second. Let me see who's first here. Oh, sorry. Zolti and then Adam Isaac Mann.
All right. Do you think this is different from like the conception that some people have for like the mitzvah of like shechita, where it's like one of those mitzvot where if you don't have to shech an animal if you don't want to eat meat, but if you do want to eat meat, then there's like a certain way of doing it, and that you don't have a chiyuv therefore in the corresponding mitzvah shomrim, that you don't, there's no chiyuv of you know leaving your pikadon with someone, but if you're going to do it, then you have to do it. The following rules apply. Is that like an equivalent model, or is this even like weaker in the sense that there really is no obligation?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it's even intuitively, I haven't thought about it all that much. Intuitively, it strikes me as weaker. I'm not sure how we're using weaker or stronger, but it strikes me as a further stage removed from duty, like more remote from duty and obligation talk. Because in Kiddushin and Shechita, you could say, well, if you want to eat, this is the duty. You have a duty to eat in this way. If you want to do a Kiddushin, like the Torah commands you to do it in this way. You could read those dinim that way. Here, I think what's going on is we're saying, like, look, this is just the rule set for, like, these are the liability, these are the rules of the roads, right? You're exempt in this case, you're liable in that case. You could create this liability that way, but there's no reason to reduce this to like an obligation that one party has. Does that make sense, Zil? Does that resonate?
Yeah, I guess. Although I guess you're still like buying into a certain system, like that itself could be the duty. Like the duty is to apply the following rules and regulations to how we operate between, you know, different classes of parties who want to keep objects.
Right, but that was like a Sefer Achinuch move that we saw in the past, right? The Achinuch will say things like, that the Beis Din has an obligation to decide cases in these ways. I have to check the Chinuch here to see what he does in these cases. In the Rambam, you don't get that. I think the Rambam just seems comfortable saying that the mitzvah is the set of rules that apply. H.L.A. Hart, I think, called these power-conferring rules. You know, it's just these are like rules that give people rights, duties, you know, powers to make legal relationships and stuff on their own. Adam, you have a hand, then we'll take Cole, then we'll take Noah.
Yeah, I think starting a similar line to Zolti, but I think you're able to read the Rambam in a certain sense that all these actual specific rules are sort of secondary to the overall principle that's really governing it. Like the mitzvah itself is the din, and the din is really based on how close you are in terms of responsibility to the object that you are a shomer of. I think it's sort
that's
of
right. Also, well, but Adam, would you acknowledge that meaning think of the set of denim.
Right.
But a large subset of those denim is exemption rules.
Exactly.
Right. And those are just as part of the din shomrim as the obligation rules are.
Right. That's why I think there's an overall category of what on the spectrum of shomrim, where do you lie? I think you also see this, the Rublitz theme brings it up in terms of there's a meiri that says, so there's even like another extent that someone's not even a shomer chinam. Like yeah. that lesson extends. So you have this whole spectrum of shomrim. And the din itself, the halacha itself, is who are you on that spectrum? And that directly has implications. These implications aren't necessarily a mitzvah itself, but they are derived from your overall responsibility.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. We're going to talk about that meiri, which is important. Yeah, very good point. Good. Shua has a question here on the...
You got the Rumba?
Huh? By the Rambam.
Oh, the Rambam. Oh, I was going to say the... The
oh yeah, ma, yeah. We have like this idea of ma'av kol tanai shev ma'amon and shomrim.
Is it a pretty? Isn't the Gemara?
The Mishnah is explicit about that.
You're allowed to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We'll talk about that tonight.
The Mishnah is explicit about one case.
No, it's about shomrim in general. Even Rabbi Meir is moda.
By it's not obvious that right. Right. What's the Mishnah talking about?
None of the Gemara. What is it? Shibada es nafshe. It's the end of the.
But isn't there like a tzad that pshia is
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. I think that's related. I think that's an important question about the ability to be masna here. Shua, you think it's immediately related to this somehow?
I think so. I think if pshia is carved out and you don't have some kind of like push at kamazic thing as intensely as maybe Lichtenstein does, then that could be, again, the chiyuv, right? Like, then you're moving from a din to a chiyuv in a more kind of like...
covert. I agree. There are ways to move to chiyuvim, right? My point here is that in the Rambam, it seems very clear that the peturim, you can see it not just in the Shomer Chinam case, you also see it in the Shomer Sachar and the Socher.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. I'm just, if we're going to write it, we got to make sure we cover all the...
Right, I agree with that. I hear that. Zecharia points out here in the chat in the Sefer Achinuch, I guess that's Mitzvah Nun Tes. Is that Mitzvah Nun Tes? Yeah, that Sefer Achinuch makes the move to try to reduce it to Chovas Bezdin. Mitzvahs Bezdin Lodun Bedin Nosei Sachar, which is like an easy way out, right? It's like, oh, the obligation here is on Bezdin to impose these rules. That's a way of getting duties out of just the system of rules, even if it's narrow, even if it's just applicable. Yeah.
But definitely not what the Rambam says.
Correct. Exactly. 100%. Definitely not the Rambam's move. But and I think that shows you how powerful that tradition that the Zohar HaRakia was tapping into, which is what Cover is tapping into, the intuition that mitzvos have to be obligations. Let me just make one other let's take the hands, then I'll make the same point in other Rambams. So next, I think, was Cole and Noah. Yeah. Was that it?
And then so it seems fairly obvious to me that even the mitzvos that are like pretty clearly, I don't know what you could call them, like obligation mitzvos. Like they have conditions. They have conditions too. There's no such thing in the Torah as an unconditional obligation. For instance, there are no mitzvos that ketanim have to perform. I mean, the whole notion of like a mitzvah is an obligation. What I assume it has to do with is this kind of Austin intuition that law is the command of the sovereign, and like people think of commands as prescribing acts that you have to perform or else you're in violation of the law. You don't need, I assume that's what Rav Lichtenstein, that's like the intuition I imagine that Rav Lichtenstein had in mind. Cause it's just like it's all over his Hashkafic writings.
I'm not attributing anything to Rav Lichtenstein here yet. I don't think Rav Lichtenstein weighed in on this question. But
he did in the article that we discussed 2 years ago about...
Oh, yes, in the rights article.
Yeah. So...
A Ben Torah knows nothing of rights.
Right. Yeah. So you don't need, so like whatever, HLA Hart wrote a whole book about how law is not the command of the sovereign. Or that's one of the things he wrote the book about. I just like to say it's, you can keep.
Well, that's right. Let me just say something cool, 'cause I want to pick up on that. I mentioned it up a second ago, but that's right. One of Hart's responses to Austin is that it's wrong to think of law as just a series of commands.
Right.
The law also confers what he calls power conferring rules, like the ability to make contracts and things like that. Those are the equivalent of din nizikin and din shomer sachar that aren't reducible to like, do this, don't do that.
So I just want to be clear. You can keep the Austin intuition that like the, you don't need to abandon like the primacy of sovereignty or the primacy of the sovereign as the kind of the principle of authorization in the legal system in order to dispute the application of that principle to like, you know, every law is a duty to perform or something.
100%, 100%. The issue here is like the every law being a duty to perform.
So it seems clear that every law is not a duty to perform. It doesn't follow from that laws are not laws in virtue of institution by the sovereign.
Correct.
There are looser, you might be,
As the Rambam says, Shehoreinu HaTorah, what was his formulation? HaTorah Shehoreinu B'din Nosei Sachar V'Socher. And then again, we'll see that in Shela. Yeah,
there's no necessary connection between the kind of the constitution of a legal system and the substantive positions that takes on particular legal issues.
Yeah, good. No, and then Gabe.
Yeah, it was just this discussion made me think of the like the Rambam's categorization of like tuma, like mitzvos tuma, sort of like he'll just say like hushet tzivanu liyos, like shechva zera tame, or you know, like it's sort of like mitzvah of fact, which is like, you know, that doesn't like fit into this category so naturally, which I think is the area that this comes up a lot.
Yeah, Shua and I are very interested in this question. So, you know, these examples of mitzvos that are not, you know, they're not like directives of like, you have a duty to do this and a duty to do that. So like these rules mitzvos are one example, and you're pointing out that there are these like, just like factual, like declarative statements, right?
Yeah, which I wonder how much like has to do with the fact that it's like our, like we're learning a sefer mitzvos is a translation, and like what the Rambam means in the, you know, what his Arabic terminology is could be, you know, confusing.
Yeah,
translation.
It's interesting. I think the Kotaret was written in Hebrew, right? Am I right about that? There's a good place.
Yeah, Kotaret for Yad, but for, you know, correct, for the sefer mitzvot is.
Yeah, that's true. It's also worth looking in the Minyan HaKatzar. You know, the end of Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam has like a Minyan HaKatzar. I wonder what that was written in. Anybody know? I don't know if anybody knows offhand. We could ask somebody. But either way, like I think like definitely relying on the formulation of din in the Kotaret gives us like some terra firma to work on. Yeah, good. Gabe?
Yeah, I'm just going to display my legal philosophy amoratus here. I'm not sure why this is like such an interesting question. Like, obviously, the camp that thinks that all law is in the form of rights and in the form of obligations and duties, like, needs to have some way to grapple with contracts, which are like legally endorsed. And maybe they just don't think contract law is part of the body of law. But
you live in the world that HLA Hart created. You don't even realize what an insight he had. If you read Hobbes's Leviathan, okay, and then think about the kind of system that would grow out of the Hobbesian sovereign, and you'll realize that it's like it's not at all clear why, given the authority of a sovereign, everything wouldn't be just a series of commands. The sovereign seems politically and legally exhaustive in a way that we 20th century folk don't think it is.
And by the way, what is
a contract in the Hasidic system?
Let me just say something, Gabe. It's not just that we live in the HLA Hart world. Hart also, I think, appeals to Hofeld for this point, where he says, right, it's not just duties, but you could have power conferring rules, where like the legal system confers certain powers on people. Powers are distinct from duties, right? Powers is the ability to change somebody's legal situation. A lot of people don't think in those terms, right? They just think that the law is a conjunction of all these like duties backed by fear of punishment. Gabe, you're asking what do contracts look like for Hobbes?
Yeah.
Cole, you want to?
Actually, now that he said it, I don't know. I mean, presumably, like some kind of exchange of. It's an interesting question. What do contracts look like for Hobbes?
Good. Well, research. I think he thinks of it. It's like if certain actions are done, that's going to generate certain duties. It's like the if you want to get married, you know, you got to. Like it's going to generate these kinds of duties. So it's like the sovereign
conditional obligations.
That's right. You reinterpret them as conditional obligations.
The Hobbesian equivalent of the Kantian hypothetical imperative.
Right. If you do this thing, you're going to have that obligation, and that's all just like the command of the sovereign. See that, Gabe?
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
All right, good. Let me just give a few other examples here quickly, then we'll get into our Revolkenstein piece. Want to point out that it's not just Socher, obviously. The Rambam in Shelo Pikadon in the Kotaret says there are two mitzvahs asay in Shelo Pikadon. Rishon is Din HaSholim, Shni is Din Shomer Chinam. And in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Resh Mem Dalet, Hi HaTorah She'orenu, Bidin HaSholel. Sefer mitzvos, mitzvah sei reshman beis, the mitzvah reshman beis, hisha Torah, hiya Torah she'orenu, bidin shomer chinam. And he just quotes the psukim. Now, in Perek Dalet of Hilchos Shelo Pikadon, where the Rambam opens, he starts off with a case of exemption. Hamafked etzo chaveru b'chinam, v'nignav o avad, hareza nishba v'niftar. So assuming that we don't think that the Shavua is a chiyuv, it doesn't sound like it's a chiyuv here, right? Hareza chayiv li shava. Ram doesn't say hareza chayiv li shava kidei liftar. It sounds like the din of Shomer Chinam is the like power to pater yourself through taking a Shavua. And so to my mind, that's striking that the exemplar case of the mitzvah of din Shomer Chinam, again, like we saw earlier, is a Ptur case rather than a Chiyuv case. All right? That's the main point I want to make. And then, obviously, you could further this analysis in other cases, like in Niskei Mamon. The Rambam says there are four mitzvos in Niskei Mamon, Din Shor, Din Ahever, Din Bor, and Din Avara. So it's just interesting to look at all these cases of a pure dinim in the system. All right, good. Everyone good with this? Ready to move on to the paradigms of liability for Shomrim? Excellent. Great. Let's do it. So we all read the Rav Lichtenstein piece. Everybody got the PDF I sent out and was able to read it. You know, they're published in the blue book, the Shem Rav Lichtenstein. I think there he goes. Hire's got a copy. The page numbers that I gave out correspond to the pages in this book. I don't know if they correspond to the PDF I gave you. You'll see in the source sheet I cite pages, but the pages correspond to this book. Good. So let me just get your thoughts off the top of your head. Anybody have thoughts off the top of your head on this article book before we get into the nitty-gritty analysis? Adin, you were going to say something or was that a mistake?
No, I was just going to say that it's just fortunate that this is, I assume, the chapter one in the book, that the page two of the PDF is also page two of the book.
Oh, yeah? Okay, good. That should... well, no, because here the book starts at page 12. I mean, this is page 11 in the book.
So you didn't just give us a scan. Okay, I thought this was just a scan of the book. All right, never mind.
No, I have some bootlegged from the original. I don't know. I have some file on my computer that like my chavrusa had gotten from some Israelis who wrote this stuff up in the beginning.
You know. So speaking of your chavrusa, your Rosenberg had a child.
Ah, Mazel tov. My chavrusa is my debate partner.
Oh, your debate. Sorry. Okay. I was being charitable.
Yeah. That is very nice. Okay. So with that in mind, you know, I'm sure everyone has a handle on the Dalet Shomrim. We don't need a, chazar, the Dalet Shomrim. We'll just say, I'll remind you very quickly. Shomer Chinam is chazar on everything except for Pshia. And part of this is that in order to patar on Pshia, he has to take a Shvua, Shelo Pasha Bo, Shelo Shalach Bo Yad. We'll talk more about the Shvua component. But Shomer Chinam generally is patar unless he's Poshea. One of the questions I'm very interested in is what does Pshia mean? And what's the basis for liability in Pshia? I think the former question is almost more pressing than the second question. Like what does the term Pshia mean in Halakha? I don't know if anybody has thoughts on this. But that's a question we're going to have to try to nail down. What does negligence, what concept does Pshia pick out in Jewish law? I think there's no consensus on this. Go ahead.
At least my initial thought is that in order for there to be negligence, there has to be a duty that you're negligent upon. No, I assume that there is another way to formulate it, but I can't think of one. Like it must be that I had a certain duty or expectation to reach a certain threshold, and I failed to do it.
See, I like that formulation very much.
Care you had to take.
In secular law, for example, I think negligence is just defined as a breach of duty. That's from what I understand. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, right? So you have a duty. There's some standard of care, like in how you're supposed to like carry out that duty. And then to be negligent is to like breach that standard and breach the duty. Right? Yes. I think that's a very nice way of thinking about it. I think sometimes you get this more Balabatish conception of Pshia, that it means like literally like an objective threshold of like recklessness. Anybody?
Like you need to be actively.
Oftentimes you hear as if there's like a graph of like how much awareness you have, like how cognizant you are. Pshia is like some clear, like objective cutoff on the graph, and then like Gneva of Aveda. So it's like, think of like if you're perfectly cognizant, then you're at like 100% cognizant capacity. Gneva of Aveda is like, oh, so let's say Gneva is like you're at 80% of your like cognizant capacity for your vigil.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. You don't hear people thinking in these terms?
What do you mean by that? You mean like?
Yeah, so it's like imagine in Harry Potter, Mad-Eye.
Constant vigilance.
What do you say?
Constant vigilance.
Very good. Mad-Eye Moody, I think he says constant vigilance, right? Just like being fully aware of your surroundings. So that's like the gold standard, right? Constant vigilance. And then there's like
that's a non-existent gold standard, right? Like,
it's an interesting question. What exactly the?
No, it's not an interesting question. Doesn't Tosos say like takap all of Shana is like an onus because there are certain things that it's just like understood, right?
Okay,
isn't that a Tosos?
You know about Tosos and Bava Kamma?
Yeah.
So what's your position on that? Hold on, Tosos for a second.
Okay, fine.
I thought the way when I talk to people, maybe I talk to the wrong people, they think that their constant vigilance is like the gold standard. And then Gneva picks out like a 80% vigilance. Okay. As if there's just like the how vigilant are you?
If you're vigilant enough, Gneva won't happen, and therefore like that's why you're Potter slash
Hive. Are you saying that the Balabatim think that Shmira is a kind of internal question about mental state when in fact it's about like objective facts about how much care you took?
Well, no. As in
what you did, not how much care you took, as in what you did, which worlds of loss you excluded by virtue of your action.
Yes. I think, and I don't mean Balabhatim in the Balabhatim sense. I mean like yeshiva guys who like think about it too deeply, actually. I think almost like the standard view in the yeshiva world is to think of these as just degrees of vigilance. And so pshia is like if you're below 20% vigilance, that's pshia. If you're below, let's say 70% vigilance, that's pshia de geneva. If you're below 80% vigilance, you're at pshia de, I got this backwards. If you're below 70, you have pshia de aveda. If you're below 80, whatever, you're around 80, you're at pshia de geneva, right? And then like onsen are the kinds of things that happen even when you're at full vigilance. And as Cole says, like the reason why these are associated with geneva aveda is because like those are like the degrees of vigilance that like roughly correspond to like when somebody would lose a lost item. So somebody who's like absent-minded, right? Or someone who's absent-minded at like the 70% level will drop their keys out of their pocket, right? Or like misplace their phone. So they'll be in a world where they're constantly losing things. Somebody who's vigilant at the pshia de geneva level, they're going to be at a world where they're not going to lose things, but they're going to have things stolen from them because they're not vigilant enough against pickpocketers. You see that? That's like I think that's the way a lot of people think of these, is that these just are degrees of awareness or vigilance. No one's heard this? No one's implicitly thought in these terms? Zachary is not.
I've definitely heard it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's encouraged by the Gemara somewhat by its line of, all intents and purposes, Geneva and Veda are identical. It says, Aveda is Karov Lapshia and Geneva is Karov Ones. It begs that there's some sort of like neat one-dimensional spectrum.
Yeah, it could be that the Gemara encourages this. Shua, this is new to you? You've never...
I just think anyone who's learned the Sugya before, it's like, even in a whatever Zolti and Cole think is like a yeshivish level. Like I remember in high school, right? Like what's the concept of Geneva Bonus, right? Like there are examples that like make for hard definitions, but at least motivate the reality that it's not like clearly a right. Like so, everyone points to Tosfos, but everyone also points like there's that Tosfos Mokama, like I said about Shena or about like what's an example of a Shmira Meula. Also, just like the general like fact that Shmira Pusa Shmira Meula exist in some like in some sense in like around, if not directly in the Shem
Sugyas,
right? And there's like the like Shlichus Yad is probably the end of the spectrum if you're like actually making a spectrum, right? Like not just Pshia, that's definitely on the Rishonim, think about it.
So I want to keep our eyes open. I mean, Zolti here affirms in the chat that it's a very common presentation of Pshia Gneva Vedanonis, that this bar.
I've heard so many like Kol Chaburas that assume this understanding. So many of it.
I guess they should go back to Shara Torah, ninth grade, because that's definitely not what we assumed.
I mean, this is an interesting thing, so I want to keep this in mind. Whereas this other way of looking at it speaks more in terms of, breaching a duty, certainly for Pshia. Pshia is not about some objective metric of how vigilant you are, but Pshia is about given like the expectation that was set, given your role, whatever, was that breached? Okay, so I want to...
Raya, like how can you have Chalasim Shiva Sofa Bonus in your straw man example? Like what does that even mean?
Well, I think the idea is that at one point you were very negligent, right?
Now you're vigilant, but it just doesn't catch up?
100%. That's right. Then you have a whole key in there, just the Ones Machmas Apshia, right?
Yeah, but that seems like very... I don't know, flaky. Like, I don't really see
The good news is that Tchilas Lepshia Sof Bonus is on the docket, so we're going to see it very soon.
Okay, cool.
But yes, I mean, I'm interested in adjudicating this question. I think it's very important to clarify. Gabe, is that a hand or is that an old hand? Gabe has a hand, but...
That's an old hand.
Okay, great.
Quick question. In general, your understanding of Peshia, is it dependent on the different type of shogun?
What do you mean?
Meaning, it sounds like you still have this type of read where either way you look at it, the extent of which what we call Peshia was considered Peshia changes dependent on the class of shogun.
Yes, very much so. I think that Peshia is going to change depending on what the expectation is. That's right.
You start saying the Chiyuv, the different levels of Chiyuvim for the different types of Shomrim are all just different names for Pshia. Like,
well,
no.
I don't want to say that yet. I don't want to say that. But I think it's very possible that we're going to define Pshia differently for different relationships, right? So you might even think, as just a logical possibility, that a Shomer Chinam is Poshea. So we define negligence differently for a Shomer Chinam than for a Shomer Sachar as a logical possibility. Because a Shomer Sachar is paid, right, the expectation for him is stronger. So it's easier for him to become negligent, right? Or if his, I don't want to use awareness levels, but we might say that his negligence standard is lower, I guess higher or lower is ambiguous here. It's easier for a Shomer Sachar to breach his duty through Pshia than it is for a Shomer China, given that there are different expectations of Shmir. You see that, Adin?
Yeah, but isn't that dangerously close to bleeding into the reason he's chayav b'gzela is because he had a higher duty, and the fact that it got stolen, haraya, that he was negligent on the duty of care that he had. Like, it's we've turned everything into pshia.
Good. So I do think there's a way to look at it that way, 100%. I think that there's a way to read chayav gneva veda as a shomer safar as a chayav pshia. Just that, like, we think that gneva veda for shomer safar is considered a kind of pshia. Hold off on that. Hold off on that point. But yes, that is one way we could read Shomer Sachar, 100%. Okay. Evan, you had a hand?
Yeah, is there a difference from what you said and just saying that the expectation is more for Shomer Sachar?
Yeah, well, I would say that the expectation is more and... Yes, and Pshia is defined by the expectation.
Exactly. Right?
Expectation of the standard of care that the Shomer is going to exercise. Good. Okay. So with that in mind, so we know Shomer Chinam is Chayav for Pshia, Patur, and everything else. Shomer Sachar, we know, is Chayav for Pshia, Geneva, and Aveda, right? And we know that a Socher has this, Socher is complicated. It's not so clear where the socher falls into the discussion. So that's right. Yeah, and then shoel is chayiv for everything. It's chayiv for onsen. Good? Everybody good on the basic rules? Okay. We'll come back to the Gemara here. The Gemara on Sadi Dalid, which explains the limud. Did anybody get a chance to read through the Parshios in Mishpatim, Perchav Bez? Okay. Is there anything interesting there? There are three Parshios of Shomrim. There's this question of where the Socher falls. First Parsha on the Torah is Shomer Chinam. Second Parsha is Shomer Sachar. The third Parsha is Shoel. Is there anything special about the Pesukim that stood out to you? We'll come back to them in a little bit, but I don't think we have to look at them right now.
Not something irrelevant, but I thought it was just interesting. That's just like the different cases between Pasuk Zayin and Pasuk Tet did not make it obvious to me that the difference between those cases was necessarily something along the lines of, you know, Shomer Chinam versus Shomer Zachar, but sound like the cases like applied to me that just in Tet, like you're dealing with like different type of object. So theoretically, yeah, different objects have different principles, and just surprised that that wasn't, you know, a major part of the discussion.
Yeah, well, the Mefarshim are talk about this. They say, oh, these are the kinds of things that you normally pay somebody to watch. Whereas, like, the other things, you just, if you give somebody Kesef Okelim, they just put it in their house. Right. So you don't really have to pay somebody to, like, put your coin next to their coins. But once you're giving somebody Chamor, Oseh, Chol Behema, those are the kinds of things they take effort, right? So those usually paying somebody as a service to safekeep those things. So yeah, I think that's how the Mefarshim go on this question.
Right here. Also, it's interesting if you throw Zohar into that as well. Then it's...
Yeah.
Like the combination of a Shomer Zachar and a Zohar within in that realm of Pesukim, they have both would directly use those objects, but in radically different ways.
Yeah, that's right. But we still don't know where Socher falls in the Chogas and the Gemara, which we'll talk about. Right. There are Arva Shomrim, but Gimel Dinim. Because we also don't know where to classify the Socher yet. Okay. So Rav Chamsin in his article sets out to outline the different conceptual mechaivim that either are at work in Shomrim or that could be at work in Shomrim. I think that's what he's trying to do in that shir, right? I mean, he's saying, here are the liabilities. Let's try to figure out the underlying principles that explain why a shomer is going to be liable in this case or that case. And he wants to put before us, I take it, the distinct mechaivim at work in shomrim. Does that sound right? Okay. So let's take a look at the argument. So the first point that Rav Chatzin makes is that, and he has an interesting diak in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah doesn't mention the fact that a Shomer Chinam is chaya for Pshia, right? It mentions that a Shomer Sachar is chaya for Gneva Veda. It mentions that a Shoah is chaya b'onsen. He thinks it's noteworthy that a Shomer Chinam being Chaya for Pshia is not explicitly stated in our Mishnah. Is that right? That's the first diak that he has. He cites Tosfos as making this diak. Shomer Chinam Nishba Lakol, Locha Shepshia Devaha Kuhu Chayavim. Tosfos here says our Mishnah doesn't have to tell us the Chi of Shomer Chinam Pshia because all the Shomer are Chaya for Pshia. Now, I mean, to my mind, it's not obvious that this is a real question because the fact that it says that a Shomer Chinam is Nishba v'Niftar, right, what is he Nishba on? He's Nishba that he wasn't Poshea. But part of the Shvuah is that there was no Pshia. So you might say that implicitly shows that obviously there's a Chi of Pshia, so you don't need to state it as a separate principle in the Mishnah. But what's Rav Lichtenstein's answer? What does he think is significant? Like, why? What's his view on why Chiyub Shia is not mentioned in the Mishnah?
Right, so he suggests that Chiyub Shia comes more from the field of Mazik, as in based off the Rambam Pshek Mazik, and it's not really critical to the Chiyub of Shomrim, and therefore that's why it's not included in the Mishnah, which is simply dealing with the Shomrim kinds of halachas.
Yeah. Good. So the Rav Chamsin's move is to say, look, there are these, let's say, ontologically distinct categories of halacha. There's Shomrim, there's the world of Shomrim, there's the world of Nezikin. Our Mishnah is interested in the world of Shomrim. And while it's true that some Shomrim pay liability or become liable for damages for Pshia, that's not a Shomer type of liability. That's just a general Nezek type of liability. Is that right, Zacharia? Yeah. So what do you think of that claim before we analyze Poshek and Mazek? What do you think of the plausibility of distinguishing between liability of Shomrim world and liability of Nezek world? Is that?
I like it in the Rambam.
What's that, Adam?
I really like it in reading the Rambam specifically.
Okay, so you like the way it explains the Rambam of Poshea Kemazik, the Karkos?
Not just in terms of that, but not like our own Rambam in Hilchos Chirot. The idea that it said like Klachobet, where is it exactly? The idea of, okay, like all you do, Nishbasha Shamar Kederach HaShomrim. That to me has like implication of like Bashir with an egg. That's done, that claim is reflecting Bashir on any level, which is applicable theoretically to all cases of Shomrim.
Saying that, so this shows that Poshe is Kemazik, is that you like, or?
I mean, that's, yeah, when I read that, in fact, that wasn't mentioned anywhere else, sort of has some implication to me, that's sort of like a baseline that's applicable to all classes of Shomrim.
Well, we'll look at, yes, Kedinatri Inshi, we'll look at that standard. And you're saying, like, to fall beneath this is what? Is not a liability of Shomrim?
It is not a liability of Shomrim, but just a liability, right? I think that's reflecting not liabilities of Shomrim, but liabilities of Bashia.
Okay. I could hear a different argument. I see why you're saying that. You could still read this differently and say that a Shomer becomes liable in Shmira for not being Shomer Kederach HaShomrim. Right, so I think that line itself could be read in two ways. What Rav Lichtenstein is grounding his reading in is the Rambam's theory of Poshea Kemazik. Right, so anybody want to tell us about the Poshea Kemazik theory? How does that work? Sfari, you want to tell us about it quickly? Sure.
So generally we have a miyot that avadim sharos ukakos, Shomrim are not chayv on, either to swear or to pay. But the Rambam has a yerali that if a Shomer is poshea by these items, they would be chayv to play because it says, she poshea maziku.
Yeah. So you have a miut of exerus akasov, which seems to say, elu dvarim she'en lemonah, vadim sharos v'karkos, shomer chinam enu nishva v'notzi sachar enu mishalim. Right, and I guess the Rambam says Shlosha Dinim Torah Barba Shomrim in an album Metalpolim, which, as Zacharia said, implies that the Shomrim Dinim do not apply to Karkos. Is that right, Zacharia?
Yeah,
yeah. So Shomrim Dinim don't apply to Karkos. Yet the Rambam thinks that Poshea is going to be Poshea Bikarkos is going to be Chayiv. Why? So blah blah blah. So the Rambam says, as Zacharia says, Avam Poshea ba Chayiv l'Shalim Shekola Poshea Maziku. So I think that is a nice diuk that we don't need Parshas Hashomrim to tell us that there's liability for Pshia, because that can be derived from, I guess, the Parshios of Neza, right? Or just a theory of Neza. Is that right, Zacharia?
Yeah.
So that does support this distinction between Nezek world and Shomrim world, and the liability of Pshia within Shomrim is really a subset of liability for Nezikim. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Good. And the Rambam says, of course, like within the theory of Nezek, there's no difference between Karka and Metaltolin. So that's why Poshea ben Karkos will be Chayev. Now, the Rambam quotes his Rebbeim, Chin Ho Rabosai. So let's just hear this case. Zachary, why don't you tell us about this case, Chin Ho Rabosai?
Chin Ho Rabosai, Shamoser Karmel Shomer, Bein Barisus, Bein Bishmiros Chinam, Pehis the Emosh, Yachbor, O Yizmor, O Yevik Mishalo, who pasha v'lo asa, and who's negligent thing, didn't do these actions, chayiv k'mi shehifsid b'yadayim. So he's chayiv, like someone who has mafsid the owner actively.
Yeah, so it sounds like a general theory that, you know, mazik doesn't require physical, like having to be a dayim. To be a mazik, it's sufficient that you're posheya, and that could, like, so given like the expectation that's set, right? So here there's an expectation that you would do some work in the vineyard. If you were negligent in not carrying out that or satisfying that expectation or keeping to the expectation, you're considered a mazik, right? Good. Now, I think this is really nice. I think this is like a really important theory. I think you get the nice distinction between Nezikin and Shomrim liability. That works out nicely. I think one thing that's worthwhile looking into, which we touched on in Bava Kamma a few years ago, is that this is a Chiddush in Nezek, right? It's a Chiddush for Nezikin that you could have a Shem Mazik just for Pshia, right? So it's a Chiddush in like the substantive rules of Nezikin. So it's we have to like look at the ramifications there. That merely being poshea is sufficient basis to view you as a mazik. For our purposes now, it's important just to create this wedge between shomrim liability and nezek liability. So far, so good. Zolti, yeah.
By create a wedge, you mean dissolve the wedge?
Create a gap.
I thought you wanted to unite the two.
Me? Rav Lichtenstein's argument is that Poshea, Pshia, is...
In that sense. Okay, fine. Yeah,
yeah, that Pshia is not a liability that arises under the description of Shomrim. It arises under Nezek, which is a distinct realm. All right? Zolt, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, doesn't like this Rambam, I mean, it does a good job of like proving that the existence of Poshea Kamazik, but it doesn't prove that the Chiyuv of Shomrim for Pshia is itself Nezikin based. It could just be that there's two Chiyuvim, two potential avenues of new Chayav.
But then how do you explain the fact that the Rambam says that the Poshios of Shomrim are excluded from Karka, but even though the Parshios of Shomrim
are excluded, so there are two potential Mechayvim. So Midin, the potential Chiyuv of Shomrim, that they're Pater Bekarkot, but Midin Poshea Kimazik, Midin as a part of like the realm of Nezikin, that there's no exemption within Karkot.
Look what he says here in the Halach in Beis Aleph. Shlosha Dinim Hamurim B'Torah Barba Shomrim Einan Elavim Metaltalin. Right, so doesn't that, if the Rambam didn't have that intro, I would be much more sympathetic to your read. Right? The Rambam would say, look, there are Tzvei Dinim and Shomrim. Some Dinim and Shomrim apply to Karkos, some Dinim don't apply to Karkos. The Rambam seems to say, look, the Parshios of Shomrim don't apply to Karka. What does apply is the theory of Poshea Kemazet. No, Zolti, do you agree with that, Diak?
I'm not really following the Diak. Doesn't this Diak just imply exactly what I'm suggesting, that at least with regard to the Dini Shomrim, Dini Schirut, that there is no Chiyu for Karkos at all, and that if you're going to be Mechayev for Karkos, it's going to be based on an entirely different track, based on Nezikin, but that doesn't necessarily represent how we're Mechayev for Pshia in general?
Are you saying that there... I think I understand what you're saying. You're saying that... this is kind of like an overdetermined argument. You're saying that maybe the rules of the Torah hold that there are two separate reasons to be mechayev someone for Pshia. There's a Nezek ground for Chiyuv Pshia, and then there's a Shomrim ground for Chiyuv Pshia. In most cases, there's no nafkamina, right? Because I guess, like, what does it matter whether you're paying qua Shomer or qua Nezek? In this case, in the case of Karka, the Chiyuv Pshia of Shomer doesn't apply, but a separate Chiyuv Pshia of Nezek applies. Is that your view, Yoni?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have to go so far as there's no difference. It could be there are substantive differences, but it could be we prefer in general, based on Chiyuv Shomerim in general, for whatever reason, I guess we have to explore. But I think it's definitely possible that there are these two avenues within Pshia.
Can we say it a little bit differently? I don't know if this is what you meant, Yoni, but I think that it's onto something, which is that if we're defining Pshia like you kind of we hafted earlier as breach of a duty, then the duty can come in two forms. There can be a global duty, which is the one that generally kind of like fills out Nezek. And then there can be an individual kind of contractual duty that's relevant more to Shomrim, right? In that case, I think you might have to tease it a little bit in terms of the Rambam, but I think that that makes life easier for us in terms of questions of like Grama and questions of like, like you said, the sugyos in like the Baba Kama sugyos of Hezek. We don't need to say that this is mazik qua mazik. This is mazik within the context of a contractual shomrim obligation.
Yeah. See, I think you could definitely go in that direction. I think that's very different from what Zolt was just explaining. See, what you were saying,
sure. I know, I was being nice.
Okay, no, I thought, because what you're saying is like, well, she is about breach of duty. In Ezekiel, like there are some just baseline duties that we all have. In Shomrim, where there's like a personal relationship, an expectation that's set, that creates like a special duty. But the breach of duty liability is all just part of this theory of Nezek, right? I think what Zolt was trying to say is like, no, like there's a parsha of Shomrim, there's a parsha of Nezekin. Pshia straddles both parshios. If there's like Pshia de Shomrim and there's separate Pshia de Nezekin. Maybe one pays Metav, one doesn't. Right, Zolt? That was what you were getting at?
Yeah.
It's an interesting question, right? I mean, it's definitely something we want to keep our eyes open for. But what Blichenstein's arguing here is that the Chi of Pshia of Shomrim is a borrowed category from the Nezikin. That's why he wants to say that our Mishnah doesn't include the liability of a Shomrim or of Shomrim for Shia, because that's a Nezikin halacha, not as above a Kama halacha, not above Mitzia halacha. That's our Buchanan argument. Zachar, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I think it's clear the Ram is saying what Blichenstein is saying. He's saying. I think it's just very suspect that Shia only comes up in Shomrim and to say, and therefore it's not really clear to me how you can just say, oh, of course it's something else. It's, of course, it's a broader category beyond Shomrim.
You're saying there's not enough evidence to sustain the theory of Poshea Kimazik as a Baba Kama halacha.
Yeah, or even if you want to go more towards Shua's end, it just becomes indistinguishable from just regular DNA Shomrim. You're saying, oh, it's just like by Mazik, you have a global duty not to Mazik people's stuff. So by Shomrim, you accepted one extra duty, and now you're violating that. It's like, okay, that sounds suspiciously like other duties of a Shomer that you specifically take on. So that's the usual distinction between a Shomer and a Mazik, that a Mazik is just a universal property, and a Shomer, he has a personal obligation, I don't think anyone can bring a case where we didn't have a prior agreement and you could say there's Shia.
Well, I would say, let's think of it this way.
What about a social contract? That's like a right. Prior agreement that you're Poshea from, right? And think about it in terms of like failing to do a proper Shmira in Baba Kama terms, right? That's a Shia, right? That you are Chayev for in the kind of like negligence part of the sense, because there's some expectation that as a Baal Shar, you perform a Shmira Mu'ula on your Shartam.
Yeah, well, I'll give you another example. Good example, Shul. I'll give you another example. And this is something I want to actually maybe spend a Chabura or two just going through, just kind of summarize this thing that we explored and we did Baba Kama, to like pull together the Poshea Kimazik evidence on the Baba Kama side. Zachariah, which is what you're looking for.
Which of the three theories are you going to present that you presented over the course of the year?
Of the Poshea Kimazik theories?
Yeah, you had like kept changing every like semester.
The kind of sit shiv and the kiem on all three of them and decide which is the better of the three.
Denar, can I ask where you are physically located?
Yeah, the Pocono Mountains.
Oh, I was going to say, we were trying to figure out why there's like a fireplace and a bear and you look like you're doing an ad for, I don't know, like an Alaskan, yeah, all right, okay.
There you go. So I want to pull together the evidence on Poshea Kimazik. Let me give you a good example, Zachariah, which kind of touches on Shua's example, a little different theme. The Bach has a tshuva, which we spoke about in Baba Kama, of a guy who's mazik when he's drunk. And, you know, the Gemara seems to say in Erevin, or at least we're trying to understand from that Gemara in Erevin, that if you're mazik when you're drunk, you're putter. Because you're not, you're, like, you don't have agency when you're drunk. But the Bach says that you could be liable for certain things if because you were poshea in getting drunk. Like yes, when you did the action, like you weren't an agent. But he says like pasha, like in get, allowing himself to become drunk where he would no longer be an agent who could exercise shmira. And that's like an interesting case where like the we're pinning the liability on him, not for like the literal action that he did. Because at that point, if he's like drunk kishichus or shalot, you know, he's not like a bar das to be liable. But what we are holding him accountable for is the pshia in permitting himself to become that drunk. So you see, Zachariah, you don't need a special shomrim relationship. It's just like understood, right? Like I'm poshea, in my view, towards other people by putting myself into a situation where I could put them in harm's way. You see that, Zachariah? And I think that's part of the doctrine of poshea kemazik in Nezikin writ large. And I think there are other examples. I'll give you another example off the top of my head. We'll look at these inside. You know, there's a Havamin in the Gemara where for Shane Varegel, you would pay not the actual crops that the animal damaged, but like the one interpretation in the Gemara of Edis is that you'd pay like the best crops like in the guy's field, even if those weren't what were damaged. And like some Achronim say, oh, that's because when you're a poshea, your animal like just as well could have ended up eating his best crops, right? And you got lucky that he ate like the inferior crops, right? Your animal doesn't read the food section in the New York Times to know like what the better food is. But like your pshia was enough to like make you like hold you liable for what like your animal could have done under the description of your pshia. So like I'm interested in those kinds of cases that tease out pshia as the kernel of the mechayev and nezikin, not like the actual harm suffered, things like that. Or
I think your best raya is the way you brought me around to this after heroic effort. Your reading of the Rambam in Perek Hei Halacha Aleph.
Yeah, the preemptive
self-defense. There's no damage, and there is an isser.
Exactly. Yeah. See, that's my reading of the Rambam. I guess it's Hei Aleph in this game, Amon.
Yeah.
Of the trespassing animals, your neighbor's animals trespass into your property. You warn the owner a few times, right? And they still trespass. The Rambam says you have a preemptive right to seize the animals and shech them. He says because it's usser for your neighbor to harm you. It's also
he doesn't say self-defense.
He says it's also for him to be mazik you. And right. Like he's not mazik yet, right? There's no nezek. But like I think if you read that as poshea kemazik, right, that solves that reading of the Rambam. We'll look at this inside and I'll make that case. But I think that's the inverse of what Rabbi Chaim's arguing here. Okay. Let me look at the next source that Rabbi Chaim brings in his piece. There's literally a family of deer outside my window. I don't know if anybody wants to see them. Anybody want to see them? Or is that like the...
Yes. Yeah.
I want to see the deer. So. All right. Here. Come on. Short visit to see
the deer. If they're trespassing, you should shecht them.
Here, look. Do you see? Okay, go outside.
Oh, man. It's
crazy. You see them or not?
No.
They're in the woods.
Oh, my God. Tomorrow, I want to see the deer.
Sorry, if they come closer again, I'll go out to give you the tour.
I need to learn. It's like the bears at Morish HaKolel.
Yeah, two deer, right here.
Do you guys keep renting the same place, or is it like a different place every time you guys go?
No, it's my grandparents' place. My grandparents' place.
Where's your shooting range? Don't you have a shooting range there?
In Pennsylvania, the law is as long as you're far enough from your neighbor's property, you can use it as a shooting range.
That's a Republican state.
Yeah, well, complicated state. All right. So the next riot that Rav Lichtenstein brings is from this really interesting Gemara in Pesachim. Let me mention that case quickly. The Gemara in Pesachim on Dach Vav. It's always great when we have a Pesachim Sugya this year, no? Talk to everybody else from what they're learning. So the Gemara here says, to make a long story short, the Gemara wants to know about what level, we spoke about the honorees, property as a bundle of rights, right? Or different interests that you have. So the interesting question is, like, what kind of economic interest do you have to have in something in order to bump you up to being a kind of owner, l'inyan, ba'ira ba'yimatze? So, you know, what kinds of interests in the object would qualify the chametz as shelcha? Sound familiar? That's one way of thinking about what's going on there. So like, you know, for example, if a bank is like a mortgage holder on your house, and your house is, or that they're a mortgage holder on your chametz, does that give them like bailus on your chametz l'inyan ba'ira ba'yimatze? So the Gemara has this discussion: if a Jew becomes like a shomer on chametz of an akum, does he have to destroy it before Pesach to avoid ba'ira ba'yimatze? So Maram Chalava quotes Rabbeinu Tam as saying what? What's the, you might see the Shomer Chinam example. If you're a Shomer who has liabilities for more than Pshia, the Chametz should be considered yours because you have a sufficient economic interest being responsible for replacing the item, damaging the item, etc., to make you a quasi-bailin. So like if you're an insurance company and you issue insurance on someone's chametz, that could make you liable for ba'ira ba'yimatze, given that you have this kind of economic interest in it. But what does Maram Chalava cite from Rabbeinu Tam? Anybody get a chance to see this? Noah? Oh, Noah, are you here, Noah?
I mean, I did see it. Yeah.
Let's see, Cole. What does he say?
Well, Rabbeinu Tam zal pirish to be kadon de shomer chinam lo mechayev de im ze acharias de poshe mazikhu elahacha shivkido etzla ba acharias onsin.
Yeah,
that's
exactly right. So, what's the key point, Cole?
So it's a. I guess the idea is that there is a. Like there's a default kind of achra, you know, of custody that's just defined in Shia terms that, and you know, kind of like over and above that, and that's just like equivalent to straight up nezek.
That's right. So having liability for nezek,
right,
is not considered to have any economic interest in the thing. So like the fact that I could become responsible for crashing into your car on the highway and paying out the costs of the damage doesn't mean I'm any kind of bilem in your car. Right, Cole?
Yeah.
Because that's just a theory of nezek, poshea kimazek. Right? There's nothing about being liable for pshia that suggests any kind of economic interest on the part of the payer. But if you have achrayas onsim, the Maram Chalava says, then you're considered to have like a true economic interest in the thing. If you're already issuing an insurance policy, and that could hold you chayiv for shelcha, for ba'ira ba'yimatze.
Am I the only one who thinks he gets the order of explanation kind of backwards? Like it's the kind of proper, it's the property question or whatever will decide the level, will decide these liability questions, not the other way around.
But I think he's trying to say is that there's clearly no property right in a case where your stick, right, your interest.
He's using it as a symptom of a non-property interest. Yes, I just did not.
That's right.
I would just
Yeah, I just don't think that's right. I mean, even if you think Poshea Kamazik is like a very explanatorily powerful principle, regular Poshim, like out in the world of Dina of Bava Kamma, don't have the opportunity to take oaths. There's a, like, the Shomer Chinam is a trusted person. There's this whole series of Gemaras and a Mafkid that go, you know, this series of like tekus basically. And what the Gemara is trying to figure out is, you know, how much is this like, how much is the Shomer Chinam personally like trusted by the Bailim, and how much is it just like a purely transactional relationship? So that's just to say that, like, you know, we shouldn't, the level, there could be independent reasons why, you know, Poshea Kamazik, both for Shomer Chinam and for like a regular guy out on the street. But I don't think that alone would indicate a different, an identity in the property relationship between the two.
Hey, yeah, that's a good point.
There was an easier way to go. He didn't even have to say, yeah, well.
Let's put it this way. I mean, this definitely supports Reb Lichtenstein's position, because Grant Ramchalava could have said what you said, Cole, which is, well, yeah, Shomer is a special relationship. That is a kind of economic interest, a special interest, property interest, even if you're just liable for Pshia. But he goes like really, he goes in the other direction and says, even when a Shomer is chayav for Pshia, that's just a general Nezek issue, not a special relationship with a thing issue.
Yeah, but then, then what you're saying is that the Shomer Chinam, then you're buying unity across Poshea Kamazik cases at the price of unity within the din of Shomer Chinam, which I
think. Exactly. That's right. This is what Zolti was.
Right. I don't see any reason to do that. That just seems like, like Poshea Kamazik is a good, like what we should be doing, I would say, what this datum invites is some analysis as to why out on the street, and you and I don't know each other, I have to show the same degree of respect towards your property as I would if you entrusted me to look after it.
So I agree with Sua here that it's not going to be the same degree of respect, meaning
whatever it is. It's the
Poshea for a Shomer Chinam, right, will be a higher standard than Poshea for somebody on the street.
That's true.
That's what I think.
But then aren't you acknowledging that there are differences? At which point, like, I mean, like, even if they have like similarities, aren't you like just going against Reb Lichtenstein's whole point?
No, because I think I could say, like Shua said, let's say that Pshia is just breach of the duty, right? So when you're in a Shomer relationship, the expectation is sometimes set higher than the expectation for some random person out there, right? So for example, if I walk out of the room and I say, oh, keep an eye on my computer, right? Let's say everybody in the room has a duty not to just like intentionally wreck my computer, right? But you as the Shomer, you have like a higher duty to like actively keep an eye on the thing. So when you fail to actively keep an eye on the thing, you're Poshea as a Shomer. Whereas like nobody else has an obligation to actively keep an eye on the thing. So their Pshia will only be when they like step or sit on my computer when they don't look around. You see that? So they're both going to be called Poshea Kamazik, even though the standard of Pshia is going to be different given the special relationship that the Shomer has with the item. You see that, Zolti? It's conceptually the same doctrine of Poshea Kamazik, even though the special relationship will trigger a different standard of Shia for the Shomer.
Are there like other instances like that where like Dinei Nezikin right. are going to be dependent upon like the existence of a relationship between, or the non-existence of a relationship?
Interesting question. Is Nezikin itself ever sensitive to how special the relationship is?
Because I would have assumed that would, that this actual distinction would be why I would include this within like Dinei Shomrim.
I mean, Hilchos Shchinim has neighbor. I don't know.
Yeah, Occam's tricky, right? Occam's tricky. Are there any more immediate examples that pop to mind of Nizik and being dependent on special relationships. I need to think more about that. It's an interesting question. I need to think a little more about that. Obviously, Poshea Kemazik and Shomru might be a nice, right? If you're looking at it through the lens of Nizikin, that's a good example.
Right. I just think that your hope that if you, unless you can find like counterexamples, I would think that once you're differentiating between levels of interactions or existing relationships between two individuals, then you're almost automatically transferring yourself into like a realm of Shomrim and less so within Nizikin, where Nizikin is just old Jews, I guess.
It's interesting. I need to think more about this. Well, let me say this. Arguably, like the distinctions between Rosh Hasharabim and Rosh Hasayachid, who's holich birshus and who's holich shalo birshus, those you might say are all like back things that affect the level of Shia, right? So you could do certain things in Rosh Hasharabim that you're not allowed to do in Rosh Hasayachid, right? So like the standard of being poshea in your rishus is very different from the standard of being poshea in Rosh Hasharabim, which is different still from being poshea in Rosh Hanizah. Right? So I would think those kinds of considerations would be where you see these this sensitivity coming to the foreground in the pure Nizikin side of things. Let me just mention the other diak that Rav Chanin has. I thought this is a nice, very nice diak. So he points out that at least on one list of the Avos Nizikin and Bava Kamma Daf Dalid, you have the Shomrim listed as part of the Avos Nizikin, right? Not just the Arba Avos Nizikin. But in like a Boshia's list, you get the Shlosha Asar Avos Nizikin, Shomer Chinam Shoah Mel Sisachar Vasocher. Okay. And again, this is like a quirky question, what's the underlying theory of the list? But Rav Chanin points out, I thought this is like, in the footnote in the Shiurim, there's like a really nice diak from Rashi that, so Rav Chanin says, why is this mentioned in the Avos Nizikin? Oh, it must be because Poshea is Kemazik. So the liability here is for the Pshia part of liability, not for the Gneva Veda Onsin part of liability. That's Rav Chanin's diak. Then there's this question in the footnotes, well, like, why not just say Shomer Chinam? Why is Shomer Sachar and Shoah listed separately? So they have this nice diak in Rashi, which I thought was really good, where Rashi says, oh, it's the Tzad Pshia for the Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sachar, and Shoel, and Socher, right? It's like the liability for Pshia in each one of these Shomerim. That's Avos Nizikin. So Rashi says, Shomer Chinam, Chaya B'Pshia. Vashoel chayiv afilu ba'onsin, which might be like registering that, like, oh yeah, he's also chayiv for pshia, but he's also chayiv for onsin. Vishomer sachar v'nosei schar chayav b'gnei aveda v'kol shekeim pshia. Like, why does Rashi feel the need to keep emphasizing the pshia dimension of all these shomrim? So that would support the reading that it's the pshia shebo of these shomrim that qualify them for Avos Nizikin, not like the Chiyuv Gneva Aveda, not the Chiyuv Onsen. Noah, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, so when Z and I were wondering a little bit sort of why then they would be like four different Avos according to Rav Ushaya, sort of like if it's like the, if you want to think about like them as Avos Nizikin because of like some collect like some shared chiv shmira that then, you know, makes the pshia into a mazik, sort of that would be like, you know, weird to differentiate.
Yeah, good. So one thing you could say here, and this gets into something I want to say a little later on, is that maybe there's like a different mechayev of pshia like for each shomer. So like it like for even like the standard of pshia might be different for a Shomer Chinam than it is for a Shomer Sachar, right? So it's not just like, oh, in the same way that you might say, well, if Poshea is Kemazik, we already know Mazik, why do you have to put Shomrim here, right? No, like the point is like the Pshia de Shomer Chinam, I guess, is a little different from a Pshia of somebody who has no special relationship with you. And of course, the Pshia of a Shomer Sachar is going to have some different features from the Pshia of the Shomer Chinam. and then the pshia of a shoel might still be different yet. So that's the way I would respond to that kind of objection. Actually, I think there's a way of furthering that point even. Let's see. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to hold off on this comment. We should stop here. So think more a little bit about Poshe Akimazik and whether it's a, in what sense it's a Shomer rule. I want to talk on Thursday about the liabilities of a Shomer Sachar. What's Rav Lichtenstein's distinction between the Poshe Akimazik and what he calls the like Rashlanut? I was a little troubled by that distinction. Not sure if anybody has a theory there. And then I want to talk about the two explanations for the Chiyuv Shoel. This, the insurance company paradigm and the Kinyan paradigm. Okay, so let's pick up with the explanation of the liability rules for the other Shomrim on Thursday, and we'll talk a little more about Poshe Akimazik in this discussion. All right? Shkayach, everyone. Very good. See you all Thursday.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.